Welcome to Fantastic Neighborhood, episode 53. I'm your host, Fred.
I'm John.
And we have a great episode for you today. John, I think I'm going to do the rundown today because we've been letting you do it a little bit too often as of the last couple of episodes. I don't think I have either, because this was like your thing. So on this episode, we have Consumption Junction featuring some various Fire Emblem tales, our yearly Oscar race to the finish, more Dead Space 3 stuff, some stuff about the 3DS, and we went to Indiecade East and we have some conversations about that. On Game Club today, we have Alien Infestation, which we'll talk about, and the outro, and we might have some special stuff after the credits.
Yeah, well, we're also going to we're going to have some reactions to the PlayStation announcement, and also follow up on our predictions for the winner of the next generation of consoles.
With that, we're going to go right into Consumption Junction.
Breaking news, Fred.
John, what just happened?
They're calling it PlayStation Orbis.
No.
Yes, they're calling it PlayStation Orbis. So why are we breaking in before Consumption Junction here?
Well, John, a newsworthy event just happened, and because we're such a news-oriented show, I thought it would be good that we covered it.
So much Tech Talk Weekly this week.
Oh, my God, so much.
But so PlayStation just had their event where they announced the PlayStation Orbis, which is the official name.
Absolutely.
I hope we aren't anybody's only source for video game news. To that person, I'm sorry. But
yeah, our bad.
So we put something out to the world on Tuesday, predicting the winner for the next generation of consoles. I think we did it with a game of Mary Boff Kill.
Yes.
So to recap my results, I'm marrying the still unknown Xbox, and I'm what do you call those movies where you have sex and kill the person?
A snuff film?
Yeah, I'm snuff filming both of the other consoles.
You knew I would know that, like, right off. Just, hey, Fred, what's that movie? Oh, a snuff film.
Dude, that phrase always reminds me of that movie 8mm. That movie disturbed the fuck out of me. I was probably too, man, I don't know. Was I growing up when that came out? It's hard to say.
I was somewhere in the teens, I think.
All right. So before we talk about the event, briefly, let's just recap our categories from our Mary Boff Kill thing. So, and see if any of our choices change here. So backwards compatibility.
Yes. I had PS4 in the Boff section.
Yeah, I had it in the kill because I knew they were going to do this thing with Gaikai. Now, they didn't say that flat out. They didn't. There was nary a mention of backwards compatibility. So I got to say, I'm sticking to my guns on that one.
I think I'm going to keep PS4 in the tentative lay category until I know more, because there was just there was so much we didn't learn at this event.
So next is motion controls and regular controls. I'm going to group these together because I had chose to boff both of those. I got to say, adding a Kinect,
yeah.
I guess I kind of saw that coming. I figured there had to be some camera involved because they're, you know, doing move or whatever.
But it doesn't really feel like a Kinect. It looks like a Kinect, but it didn't. It's not really a Kinect because it from what they explained at the event, it only tracks the movement on your controller, not your body.
Of course it does. It's the same as the iToy. It's a double iToy. They're saying it doesn't track your body. The iToy tracks your body. It's what you code it to do. I mean, it's a stereo camera. You can get it to do a bunch of stuff.
Sure.
But
we will see what the exact feature set is when it actually does come out. And
yeah, I knew there had to be a camera involved. I bet it ships with everything because it looks a lot cheaper than a Kinect. But you know, I knew there had to be a camera involved because they're putting Move right on the controller, right? But you know, what Media Molecule showed of this, like, sculpting, I don't know. I'm not going to sculpt with my PS3.
Yeah, no, I want to play games on my system, but and maybe watch Netflix.
But regular controls, I mean, I gotta keep both of these things there. Regular controls, dude, that controller actually looks fucking comfortable.
You know, I'm going to reserve judgment until I actually hold it. I think it looks stupid, but at the same time,
How does it look stupid? It looks like a DualShock, but with more meaty grips and better triggers.
Horseshoed, right? Like the trackpad looks like it's just sort of shoved in there. I don't know. Like I said, I'm mostly reserving judgment because, like, for what it's worth, I loved the Dreamcast controller, even though it's super clunky.
It's horrible,
really ugly. But I still have fond memories of it.
You have fond memories of it, but it's not objectively, it's not a good controller.
Exactly. So I think a controller is something that you're going to need to hold on to. With all that being said, like, I think it's kind of dumb looking, but at the same time, like, I put the Wii in the kill category for this, for at least for motion controls, and I might have to swap the position because the Wii U is starting to look like a better thought out design.
I disagree with you completely on this one. But let's go to the graphics category. So the graphics with all the X's, PC architecture, 8 gigs of RAM. It's gonna look pretty. I mean, Killzone looked pretty, and it's interesting that the Killzone people learned how to use colors.
much I want to say about that.
The other thing I thought was interesting was that Square Enix showed the same fucking Target video that they showed at E3. Like,
oh yeah,
dude, that's fucking CGI. Like, straight up, they said that's a Target video. Why fucking show that? Oh, you're killing me. At least with the racing thing and the Killzone thing, like, those were live demos. That was rad.
Yeah, the Square video that they showed had, that footage, not only has that footage been out, but I'm pretty sure that their screens from that video were the ones circulating around the internet when, like, the next gen conversation started up.
Yeah, something like that. Anyway, yeah. So then the other things were online ecosystem and marketplace. Ecosystem!
So I counted ecosystem 4 times in that I was doing a buzzword count while we watched it.
All right. So I put Mary and I'm going to keep him there. I think the idea of an instant game demo is really fucking neat. The idea of it predicting games and it'll have those queued up, provided you have the bandwidth for that. And I do. I think that's really neat. I think there's something to the sharing, like the stuff they showed in fucking Car Club or whatever the hell that was. I mean, I'm already in a Car Club in Forza. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I had it in my fuck category, and quite frankly, I don't even know right now because the amount of connectivity you actually need for this console to work, and it feels like, and I don't know this for sure, but it almost looks like it's going to be an always-on console. Like, I feel like you can't use it without internet, period. Like, you won't be able to get anything. I didn't like some of the features that they sort of pimped. Like, you know, there's a lot of features that they showed that no one was asking for within their online structure.
Well, the online pass the controller thing, that's idiotic. Yeah. That's almost as bad. That's almost as bad as when Xbox tried to tell me I should watch Netflix with other people's avatars. Like, yo, I don't want to listen to people talk during my fucking episode of The Next Generation, you know?
Exactly. And, you know, it's funny. I was one of my favorite things I saw during the speech on Facebook was my friend Ose, who I'm giving a shout out to right now, said, that's what you offer me, Sony? The ability to lose my manhood and let a friend take over my game over the net and pass something for me? Like, it really, like, what is the purpose? Like, how many do they think we're all, like, kids passing the controller to dad to get us past the level?
No, I just think that was, like, something that somebody figured out they could do. So rather than ask if they... I fucking forget. You know, nobody ever asked whether they should do it just because they could do it. I don't know. Is that from Jurassic Park?
Yeah, it is. But the other stuff that was there, like the screen sharing stuff, like it, you know, oh, it's cool. Now I can take video and share it on Facebook or whatever have you. That's
whatever
cool,
have you.
Like, it almost, like, there's a button on the goddamn controller to do it now. That feels really weird. Like, is it such a prominent feature that you need a button for one-click access to take video of your game?
Yeah, that's not great. So price, there was obviously no talk of price, but for all the features they're pushing into that box, they're either going to overcharge or take a fat loss on every console.
Well, let's look at it this way, right? Price, we can determine this much. If you want to get the full experience out of the console, you need to buy the console, at least one game, and a Vita.
Okay, and that's stupid. Like you're flame baiting.
No, but they built a lot of the experience into the Vita ownership, and that was a big part of what they were showing at the event.
To get the full Dreamcast experience, I've got to take my VMU to school and battle my Sonic the Hedgehog little pokey character against my friends. Like, no, come on.
Let's judge this on historical, right? How much does a game cost right now new? $60?
Yeah.
So we're going to assume it's not going to go any lower than that. So let's say a game is $60. And how much does the Vita cost right now? $350?
$250 and $300.
$300. And it came out at $350.
Dude, nobody has the 3G one. I can't believe I'm fucking defending them because of you.
No, but what I want to point out is, like, so obviously the console is, we can safely assume it's not going to be any cheaper than that. And that already is, like, pretty costly considering, you know, an Xbox costs, what, like $99 now or whatever have you.
It does not. It does not cost $99.
With the subsidized plan.
Okay, yeah. God, you're doing this on purpose now.
No, but I have to make assumptions though because they didn't tell us anything about it.
Yeah.
So I had this in the boff category, and I think it's going to get demoted to kill. Because I think by the time this comes out and the release date, they gave us a vague window of holiday 2013. So assume sometime between October and November, right?
Or they try to eat some lunch and get it out there in September, but we'll see.
I think that's going to be really ambitious, but we'll time will tell. But by the time that launches, yeah, well, we see what happened to them. By the time it launches, I'm almost confident the Wii U is going to be at least a better value proposition from what it is right now. Larger library of games, possibly a price reduction. I think the PS4 gets demoted to kill in this.
I think you're crazy if you think that Nintendo is going to come out with some good stuff in the next 6 months. Shit, dude, games take a long time to make, you know? Anyway, I'm not changing anything here. I think we'll see. I think they're going to take a hit. There's rumors out there that they're going at $429 and $529. I don't think they can afford to do that personally. So I think their top SKU can't go past $450. I think like $350 and $450 might be better for them.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree.
So second screen experience. Yeah, nothing changing here. Fuck you. Let's be honest. I kind of want a Vita, but I don't want a Vita that much.
No. And well,
I want a free Vita.
Yeah, if you're one of the five contest winners, maybe. What I'm thinking with the second screen experience, though, is what they did show is a lot of connectivity to Sony-branded products that you're never going to own, like tablets. But they didn't specifically say they'll work on Sony product. You know, they said that this will work on your phone, this will work on your tablet. So perhaps they're doing what Microsoft Glass is doing?
I think they're going to. Do the same thing as the Xbox Companion app, but you know that really great functionality that remote play, which goddamn that would be awesome if I could just take my iPad, if I could leave a game in my PS3 at home, take my iPad somewhere, and fucking use the Bluetooth DualShock controller and play my game on it. Gosh, that would be great.
Yeah, I'm not holding my breath on that, but it would be pretty rad.
Yeah, but via the Vita, I don't really want to do that. You know, the Vita is getting a price drop in Japan to down to like it's the equivalent of like $220. So I expect it's going to be $200 in the U.S. very, very soon. Still, that's too rich. It's too rich for my blood. I think at $150, I might be interested.
Yeah,
I know absolutely. I know you probably don't want one at all, but.
No, I really don't.
So here's
here's the weird one, John.
Yo, comma, Japanese games.
So it was some hour plus some minutes before a Japanese person was seen at this event.
87 minutes.
And, you know, the first person they brought out, I forget his name, he was the Capcom representative.
Showing Dragon's Dogma 2.
Yeah, basically. Although, I'll be honest, that demo did not come off bad.
Yeah, but that's not...
I don't know if it was a demo so much as an FMV with QuickTime events.
That's not... That's not a... I don't think that's an exclusive.
No. So, it looked interesting.
As far as other Japanese games go, I mean, we got Square Enix showing the same demo, the Target video they've been showing for a while now. And then the other guy from Square Enix saying... Final Fantasy is going to keep going. There's a fucking shock of the century. Breaking news.
Dude, when he said
PS
that,
Orbis.
I was like, let me go to Twitter and tell everyone this shocking and late breaking revelation that there will be a Final Fantasy game coming out in the near future.
Yeah. So,
can I tell you, it was that was the most awkward moment of the entire conference. They brought out one guy. He showed the Squaresoft video that we've already seen, and then he goes, oh, I've got someone else to bring out, and they bring out someone else. He comes out, he cracked a joke that fell dead,
and then
he goes, and by the way, there's another Final Fantasy game coming, and then walked off stage.
Pretty much.
Yeah. I mean, it was almost as weird as at the end of the kill screen video when no one was clapping.
Fred, I've got a late-breaking... Dreamcast-related number for you here. So 8 gigabytes of RAM, that equals 16,777,216 VMU blocks.
That's some good math you just performed there.
No, I got it off of Twitter, so that might not be true. So let's see.
Do you mean to say our fact-checkers didn't get on top of that, John?
Dude, I'm like a modern journalist. Fuck facts. Twitter. Somebody said it on Twitter. It's true. all right. So what's our – is your vote changing in that one? Yo, Japanese
so I
games?
I had them in the marry category. And you know what? Quite frankly, I still think they're going to be there. I think they are going to have the best quality Japanese games. The question becomes more along the lines of, are Japanese games even of any quality that I should care about anymore?
You know what would have changed? What would have changed my vote in the positive way here?
Last Guardian.
Yeah, so I'm taking the F. God, I gotta keep it because Microsoft's not gonna do any better.
No, Microsoft is not gonna do any better. That's the thing. So I think they're gonna stay in the Mary category. The problem's not the consoles in this category.
I think you're a crazy person because I think the Japanese games are gonna be on the Wii U. So. I don't know. Last category, Fred. What is it?
This is exclusive hits.
So let me count the ways. So we've got Race Club. I think that's what it's called, right? Which sounds like a really bad...
Drive Club.
Oh, yeah. Race Club sounds like, ew, something gross is happening out in the woods with a bunch of weird white people. So we got that. We got Killzone, whatever. We have Infamous, colon, whatever.
The Witness is a temporary exclusive. It's a launch exclusive, but then it will be on other platforms.
Yeah. The only one that got me excited was The Witness. Nothing else was... There's three other games that were exclusive, right?
There was The Witness, Drive Club, Infamous, Killzone... Capcom's demo, Square's
that was
demo,
not exclusive, not exclusive.
Watch Dogs,
not exclusive,
not exclusive. That was. I mean, there was really nothing else going on there. And then the sculpting tool game, which I imagine would be exclusive.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to keep them in the kill category on this one.
I'm actually gonna have to demote them. I actually had them at married, believe it or not, and I'm gonna demote them to kill.
Yeah,
just the ball.
No new IP, just kind of like colon versions of their current games. I mean, you know what I mean? Like not a numbered version.
Right.
which is really weird because Killzone 4 PS4, you think that would be a fucking no-brainer, right? The other, Killzone Orbis and PlayStation Orbis, you know, you'd think that'd be a no-brainer. just nothing really got me. I think Killzone has been not a hit for them. Who's getting excited? Like, that was supposed to be their Halo competitor. Like, there's nobody that is likes Killzone as much as people like Halo, you know? As much as Halo people like Halo.
I've never paid any attention to the Killzone franchise, I think, much like, you know, the rest of video gamers. But, like, I think it's so weird that, like, the good guys are blue and the bad guys are red and everything is colored that way. I mean, the bad guys in the Killzone titles might as well, they might as well come from a place called Evil But Bad Guidia. You know, like,
it's called
hell, nonsense villains.
It's called Hellghast.
Yeah, it's like, it's just nonsense villains. Like, maybe if that was, like, a little more serious, I would give a shit. But it's literally good guys versus bad guys, the video game.
So in summation, like, I really want to be excited, and I am a little excited, but what I really wanted to be shown in one of these conferences and you know, holding out for Microsoft, is I want them to show me something I didn't know I wanted. Is that, like, too much to ask? Like, I think it is.
You want them to be innovators, right? You want them to come out with something and you go, like, oh my god, you know what? I would never have thought of that. That's brilliant, because a bunch of guys spent years in a room trying to pound out a great idea. And there were some things on that console that none of us predicted, like the ability to share, the ability to not only stream games, but to watch your friends' games play live as they play them, stuff like that. I mean, we all figured there'd be something social, but we didn't know it would be at that level.
There have been leaks about that kind of stuff, but honestly, that shit doesn't excite me.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't excite me either. You know, and it's not that it excites me, is that we didn't expect it, and then it still doesn't excite us. Who knows? I mean, I have a feeling that's a feature that it will be on the Xbox, but the thing that, I thought about this conference. The best thing to come out of this conference is the fact that this did feel like, here's the opening shot in the next wave of the console war. Like, you know, gloves are off. Let's go.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that it gets the other companies off their ass and it actually becomes a competition to, you know, claim the space. Because I feel like a loser in this year's console, like, video game industry has become more and more cutthroat lately, especially with, like, the closing of THQ after, like, you know, you can have one failed game in this industry and be gone. And I think that after this wave of consoles, like, we may have a competitor out of the race again.
I think this is great for Microsoft because they get to maybe put 9 gigs of RAM in if they want.
Well, I mean, 12 maybe. I don't know.
Some of that tech stuff got me a little bonery. DDR5 is fast, right? That kind of RAM? DDR5?
DDR5 is the... Well, I mean, most systems don't even have it right now. Like, it's really fast. 8 gigs is not a substantial amount, but it's enough.
It is if you're running fucking games and you have an OS absolutely built around games and you don't have the bloat of OS X or Windows.
Yeah, it's more
it's
about
a fuck ton
the
of RAM, dude.
Yeah. And, you know... But that being said, like, there were some weird things at this event. Like, they showed the Unreal 4 demo running real time, and I don't know if it was my feed or not, but it actually looked a little choppy.
It is your feed. Here's the problem with them not getting this to a television channel. Why this wasn't on Spike is fucking beyond me. But
because it was 2 hours long with no breaks for ads.
But the video compression,
right.
Even 1080 stream on TV or for that matter over the internet, like, is not going to show what these things are actually going to do over an HDMI cable into your gorgeous television.
And so, you can probably safely assume that this was a 30 frame per second feed as opposed to what, I mean, the console's probably putting out 60, if not like a double rate, like 120 refresh rate.
Yeah, I imagine, I mean, we're going to be seeing 60 as the standard.
What else was interesting about this, though? No mention of 3D.
It's not really that interesting. Nobody's been mentioning 3D for about a year now.
Yeah.
I think that's... Sony was leading the drive on that, but I think it's on the developers now. If they want to put it in, these consoles will support it. It's still a little, you know, it's a little disappointing to me. I like 3D, but I'm like the only person that likes it. So Fred, what are your favorite tweets?
Well, my favorite tweets, other than ours, you mean?
No, I mostly mean of ours, because I'll tell you some of my favorites that I did. Was OMG, a non-white or Asian guy. Oh, but he didn't get a speaking role. And how about a female developer?
That was weird.
Yeah, and there were not a single female brought up on stage. 2 hours of our hobby being inclusive, and it was 95% white or Asian guys.
Well, and, you know, on the plus side of that, you know, to flip that coin, at least they didn't have, like, booth babes.
Oh, shit. You know, at least. We forgot to mention in our exclusive hits thing, Diablo 3 is coming to PS3 and PS4, and also that it will be at PAX East. That's really interesting, because Blizzard and Sony don't usually do PAX.
Wait, that how is that news, and who gives a shit?
I don't really care.
No one cares it. No one cares. My favorite tweet was actually I'll say what the tweet was, and then I'll give you context. I wrote, "I'm laughing my ass off right now," and that was right before they demoed at least showed the CG video for the new Infamous game.
Oh,
they opened up with that big speech. I had no idea what they were talking about. I thought they were going to do some fucking... The imagery was cool. The story was a little bit adult, and it was dark, and they were building up to like this cool Big Brother dystopian future, and you don't know what it is. And then the guy went, "And imagine they're superheroes."
Yeah, that got me too. So... If I had to pick a favorite moment from the press conference, gotta be Watch Dogs live demo. I thought one of the characters like screamed, "Get that fucking guy!" during the middle of like a Sony official press conference is fucking awesome to me. And also when your hero, who I'm just calling Watchdog. So when Watchdog like tackles that guy that was like gonna stab that girl, and he fucking just pulls out
Watchdog.
Yeah, he just pulls out his ASP, like his collapsible baton, and just like fucking goes to town on the guy. I'm like, it's like I want to take back anything I've ever said about violence in video games. I just want to do this. I just want to do this right now. Oh, I just want to beat the shit out of that guy. Ugh.
You know what felt good about that demo was actually the fact that like when you're running after the guy, like he's just as fast as you.
Yeah.
Like it felt like a real visceral chase. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, dude, it looked really rad. Yeah. So do you have a favorite moment?
You know, I'm not sure. I think my favorite moment was actually like when the blazer, jeans and t-shirt committee came out for Bungie's new game. What are they calling it? Halo. No.
Destiny. But there was a Halo clip shown
at
the
Sony.
There was
a Halo clip at the Sony event.
Yeah, that gave me a little bit of wood.
Yeah, I think, I don't know. I liked seeing The Witness. I actually liked hearing Jonathan Blow talk about it a little bit. Unlike the rest of the internet, I don't think he came off very douchey. I mean, and he has come off douchey at things before. I think he was pretty good at this one. The Witness looks like a fun puzzle game.
Yeah,
I mean, it looks like Myst 2013, but that's fine because Myst was a great game.
We're actually playing like Myst 2013 in Game Club this week, but I Arthur Geese was like, "Oh, here comes Jonathan Blow to be all douchebaggy," and it's like, bro, he made fun of all the explosions and typical ass video games that were just shown, and it was so. Man, some of the like the dichotomy on Twitter between people like going "fuck yeah, this is actually pretty cool" and people going "yeah, this looks like video games." I don't know.
No, I'll tell you this much: one of the better moments of the thing, and this is going to be super tech talk nerdy of me, but like when they did the face to demonstrate how many polys they could fit into a character model now. And they showed what looked like the Crypt Keeper D. Snyder model. It did feel like, I mean, it still felt a little bit Uncanny Valley, but it was close. It was much closer than anything I've seen before.
Yeah, But I mean, I think we're going to see that on the Xbox too. I mean, it's going to be graphics.
Yeah, but it gives me hope for the next gen of gaming, right? Like it really feels like we're almost there as far as being able to have the tools to tell a realistic story.
So anyway, Fred, we rambled for about a half an hour in our quick news break here.
No,
we won't, because this episode is going up in 20 minutes. So with that, I guess we'll come back with Consumption Junction.
Sounds good.
For reals this time.
On the real. With Consumption Junction. Hi, John.
Hey, Fred. I think this will probably go pretty quick.
Yeah. So we have some Fire Emblem stuff. I think you should talk about your bit first, and then I should tell you my story.
Did you buy it?
That's part of the story.
Okay. So just a quick check-in. My save time is at 25 and a half hours. My total play time is at 34 hours and 10 minutes.
That's actually not that bad.
That's 9 hours.
For your first go, though?
But now I'm kind of just...
I don't know. I mean, listen.
I'm just cruising through people now because I, you know, my characters are all, like, super strong. So I just use my B levels a lot to plus them up.
Sure. But, like, yeah, I mean, you get to a point where, like, you know your tactics in that game, right? It's just a matter of executing properly.
Absolutely. And, you know, there are still, like, some... I'll do some stupid shit. I'm like, why did I send that fucking war monk out there? He's not protected. But, anyway. So that's what's going on. So say, Fred, I didn't know Fire Emblem games were dating simulators.
Apparently, as of late, they are.
So you can... I don't know if this is in previous games, obviously, but, like, pairing characters with each other to build up their reliance on one of each other, their support attributes, will... when you reach... So it's, like, you know, it goes... It's great. It's, you know, very much graded on letter-based thing. It's, like, C, B, A, and then S rank, right? So S rank is the characters actually get married.
Because it's from Japan.
But S rank is the characters actually get married. So, you know, I didn't realize why one of the main characters married this one lady at the end of the first act. But I guess it was because they're the only time I ever doubled up that unit was with this other character. So it's like super weird. But then, you know, I started being a little bit more deliberate in it and pairing people off. And, you know, I've got like four married couples and stuff in it now. You want to know what's kind of weird, Fred?
What's kind of weird, John?
So you can only have male and female pairs reach the S rank to get married. Unless, you know, this changes later on, but I cruised through several characters, and for the female ones, the only people they were capable of getting to S rank for, where there was even a slot for it, was with male characters, and vice versa for male to female. You end up having about 50, 60 different characters can be in your party. You're telling me not a single one of these characters every single one of them is heterosexual. Like, I don't know, man. And not to mention, you can't make these people like form, you know, lifelong friendships. Like, I don't just reach the highest level of support, it's got to be a male female pairing. I don't know. I just find that a little fucked up.
I mean, I don't want to defend it, but I can kind of. It is a medieval setting, right? Like, it's a fantasy medieval setting.
It's completely a fantasy setting, though, because there's females on the battlefield. So if your justification is some sort of, you know, weird, you know, adherence to real life or whatever, I mean, it's wrong. And I mean, you have a feminine.
Well, no, I can, but.
But you have effeminate little boys running around casting spells and killing dragons and, you know, women on horses being really strong types. I mean, so it's not, like, sticking in traditional, like, gender roles, certainly, but this one aspect of the game is completely blocked.
So, I mean, I could see a couple of pieces of reasoning here, right? Like, one could be... I don't know, maybe there's more than meets the eye as you play through. I don't know if that's necessarily the case. B, it could possibly be that the difficulty of pairing all of the different characters to every single character, like, it does double the work. I don't know if it's just them being lazy.
Well, so to answer your first one, it doesn't seem that way. From what I can guess, halfway through the second act, and it's when you go to a character's support screen and you could see all the relationships they're capable of having, it, you know, it has the options you haven't reached yet grayed out, and that option isn't even there for same sex characters. To address your second one, but you can already get up to an A rank of support with same gender characters. So it's not about doubling the work. It's about maybe about 5% more work. And from listening to the 8-4 Play podcast, and those are the guys who do a lot of these translations and did this translation, it's the biggest translation they've ever done, simply because of all those different character relationships that can happen. But it seems that the same gender option is just blocked up. Don't get me wrong. Like, I feel weird pairing these characters off in the first place, like playing weird matchmaker to the point where now I'm just like putting characters that are so obviously wrong for each other together because I think it's so funny. Like, you know, putting a princess with the barbarian and stuff like that. But the fact that you can't put a same-sex couple together in 2013. I don't know. Are we going to... I don't know how homosexuality is treated in Japan. But, I mean, if BioWare has made some steps forward in this space, and, I mean, some other games are definitely more open, I think that Japan could do it too.
I mean, I think in Japan it's still very much more of a taboo than it is here. And keep in mind how Japanese culture treats women on a whole. They're still very objectified. They're still treated as, you know, sort of like very cutesy, very over-sexualized. You know, there's a lot of, you know, rape overtones in a lot of the stuff that happens over there that comes over here.
But that's
just different.
That's the thing, is so many parts of this game are progressive that, you know, I can have female knights and lords and stuff. It's just that there are some weird places where they leave out these pairings.
Ask yourself this, John. Are there any ugly women in the game?
I mean, I don't know. Like,
Are there any ugly men?
These are sort of anime characters. I think everything's pretty cutesy. The men are, I don't think there's any ugly characters. Period. I mean, there are certainly female characters that are made to look more butch and male characters that look more effeminate. But yeah. Anyway, it just bothers me a little bit.
You know, John, small steps.
I guess there is some stuff there's really weird the way they do the voice acting. It's not fully voice acted, but they'll do like some sort of one word up front when the character's line is displayed on screen. So it ends up being these characters grunting at each other for like 5 minutes in the conversation parts, which is super weird. But some of the in-game like when it goes to the battle scene and some of the quick VO is really kind of pretty cool. Like just some of the shit is really sick. Like you'll have a character go, "You're all gonna die," and stuff like that. It's really kind of cool. But yeah, so I'm still loving this game. I took a bath last night for 2 hours and played this game until the battery ran out.
John, you take an awful lot of baths, and we always seem to talk about them on the show.
I just have a lot of tension.
So I have a Fire Emblem story, of all things. I haven't actually gotten my copy yet. The end of this story is I did actually order a copy. I'm waiting for it in the mail right now. So
that's weird because you can have it instantly.
Yeah, if I want to pay $80 a month. Anyway,
it went out earlier today. It's $40.
I want a physical copy, John.
Why?
Well, I'm getting to this. I want a physical copy. Anyway, went out earlier today to go shopping for something unrelated with my wife. At some point, I stopped by the Dunkin' Donuts in my neighborhood, which happens to be right next to the GameStop, and my wife went across the street to the Rite Aid to go buy some stuff. While I was in the Dunkin' Donuts, I overheard a conversation of two people who had just come out of the GameStop, and I'm going to abbreviate the conversation, but it went like this. "Hey, I really wanted to buy that new Fire Emblem game, but they didn't have it, so I bought the digital copy at GameStop."
Yeah. So what's up?
It just seems so. So I had no. First of all, you can buy it through the e-store, right?
Yeah.
So why the hell would you buy it at GameStop?
Hey, John. So you know they sell like Steam cards and gift cards and, you know, Xbox 360 point cards and stuff like that at these game stores. You know that not everybody works in a world where they have credit cards.
It just seems so awkward to me. Like, I walked I actually walked into that GameStop right after, and I went up to the guy, and I'm like, "Hey, do you have a copy of Fire Emblem?" Like, I'm just playing dumb. And the guy goes, we don't have any physical copies, but I can sell you one of the digital copies." And I just, like, looked at him, and I'm like, "No, I can buy that myself. I'll just go buy that myself." And I walked out the store. It just seems so awkward to me to buy a digital copy. They didn't have a physical card because I looked on the rack. You know how some of those games, like, you get the card and you scratch off the back and you get the code for it? They don't even have that. They sell you a receipt that has the code on it.
Yeah. So, but Fred, like, the physical manifestation of an online points code doesn't really matter. I mean, at the end of since the hack, I haven't put my credit card information into PlayStation Network. I haven't put my credit card information into Xbox Live since my account got hacked. Like, I buy fucking points cards. I feel a little bit better putting my credit card information into my Nintendo consoles because it is locked to the console and not to, you know, a fucking profile, which is backwards. But, you know, that's just the reality of a lot of people's gaming experience. But I can understand why you'd think that was weird.
It just felt really awkward to me. And what it felt like was GameStop desperately trying to find a niche for itself, fully knowing that their time is limited in this world because of how digital everything is going.
So yeah, but Fred, you're the same token. Like, you're the same guy who just said, "I'm not going to buy the digital copy. I'll order it and have it sent to me in the mail." So I mean, there's certainly a space for them, and they, you know, Steam cards are a big seller.
I believe it.
Not everybody has a credit card, man. You see Montel Williams trying to fucking get people or so, no, him, he's doing the quick turnaround loans, and then
And then there's the Native American ones.
Yeah, and then there's what's his name from Def Jam, Russell, Run DMC, Rev Run is his brother, Russell Simmons, trying to sell his branded prepaid credit card. I mean, let's just get real. I mean, like, not everybody has credit cards, and that's probably not necessarily going to change in the near future.
Yeah, maybe I'm spoiled, John. Maybe I'm spoiled. Maybe we should change the show to Spoiled Gamer.
You know, that might actually get us more hits than Fantastic Neighborhood. We are spoiled, Fred. We are relevant hits. We are 30-year-old white men. Everything is marketed to us.
I know. Anyway, moving on, John. I wanted to talk. I played a little bit more Dead Space 3 over the long weekend we had, and I'm on Hoth right now.
Is it cool? Is Hoth cool?
It's, you know, the game so far, like, all the complaints I had about it earlier on, I still sort of have. The storyline is getting a bit more interesting, although the convention seems to be that you meet up with your group, you get separated for some reason, and then you have to make it back to your group again, and then you make it back to your group, and then you get separated again, and then you have to make it back to your group. Like, they find all these excuses to separate you from the survivors you're working with. It seems a little bit like lazy storytelling.
I don't want to poo-poo you too much, but I listened to a spoiler cast for Dead Space 3. I'm going to go ahead and disagree with you about the quality of the story.
Well, I'm not all the way through, so it's building on me. And I'll tell you, the little things that you find throughout the game, like the text journals and the recorded pieces, are very well done and very interesting and add a lot of backstory to the game. Which brings me to the side quests. So there's a large series of side quests in this game that usually just, you know, they just reward you with items at the end of the rainbow. And there's competitive, or there's single player ones, and there's co-op ones. Obviously, I'm only playing the single player ones right now. They all have what feels like the same exact flow. It's usually a separate walled off building or area or part of a ship somewhere that doesn't interact with the main storyline whatsoever. Like, they're these little walled buildings, and you go into them, and the building itself is the level, complete and thorough and 100%, nothing else extraneous. But you know what I mean? Like, it's like these little walled-off gardens from the rest of the game.
Yeah.
And they all have this same sort of flow of there's a survivor's message, and you find out more about the survivor as you go through, and then you find out what their inevitable M. Night Shyamalan twist ending was when you get to the end of the rainbow, and then you kill a bunch of guys and you get some stuff.
All right.
And it's not bad, but it just, once again, it could have been, I feel, so much more than it actually is.
So, probably. Let me ask you a question. Love triangle. Is there a love triangle in Dead Space 3?
Kinda. There's a character very early on who you find. So there's from Dead Space 2, the character Ellie, who is the female.
Yeah.
Who I never really considered to be a love interest. She was just another character who was fighting, you know, the monsters that you are fighting with you. But Ellie and Isaac apparently were like a thing for a while, and they were on the run. And you find this all out very, like, in the very beginning of the game. And then you find out that she left him for whatever reason, and that unfolds as you play the game. And then there's a guy who comes to, like, rescue you, who's not, it's not Carter, it's not the second player version character, but it's another guy who she was dating or something along the, like, it seems very juvenile and very,
That's what really threw me for a loop. Cause I heard about in what you described, you could have just said yes to when I asked you if there was a love triangle.
I know, but I like to elaborate, John.
That sounds fucking, what I heard about this storyline sounds fucking infantile. But again, let me get back to my 3DS, dragon dating sim. So I paired my character up, the one who's my avatar that I made in the beginning, with the she's basically Zoe Deschanel's sister, the Emily Deschanel from, you know, Bones. Like, she's really, like, clinical and stuff. Like, that's basically who I put my character with.
That seems very right for you.
I need somebody a little more cold. Anyway, so, you know, speaking of 3DS, and this is what we call a segue, Fred, did you buy one?
I did buy a 3DS,
Street
John.
Street Pass!
So I bought a 3DS. I didn't buy an XL because I actually got some hands-on time with the XL, and it's quite frankly, like, it's just too big for what I want to do with it. I want a handheld.
It's too big. You need both hands.
It doesn't fit nicely in the places I want to put it.
I got to tell you, like, I would, for when I'm at home, I would prefer the XL because my fucking fingers go numb holding the regular size one. But as far as like throwing it in my pocket, like to and fro, like when I'm on the subway and when I'm on the move, the regular size one is for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Same thing. And I do most of my portable gaming in portable situations. Like I'm going to be going on the subway every day to work with the portable. And, you know, when I go to PAX, if I have the thing, if I'm going to collect Mad Street Passes, I need to have something that I can just slide into my backpack or my pocket or whatever and not be obtrusive.
So I'm going to actually give you my 3DS to take with you to PAX.
Just to get you Street Passes?
Yeah, to get the Street Passes.
I don't know how valuable Street Passes are, but let me say something. John, I want to address one of our a very special segment of our audience. So let me just go on this one. Hi, Japan. Wikipedia defines user interface design as the design of computers, appliances, machines, mobile communication devices, software applications, and websites with the focus on user experience and interaction. The goal of the user interface designer is to make the user's interaction as simple and efficient as possible in terms of accomplishing user goals, what is often called user-centric design. So, Japan, now knowing that, I would like to ask you if you could please, please, please hire one when you make these consoles.
Fred, you know, one of the people on this podcast is actually a UX designer.
You don't say. I didn't know I was a UX designer. That's a weird thing to find out.
So I actually couldn't agree with you more. It's the same problem on the Wii U. Their UI is bad, and it's slow, and there's no hierarchy. It's bad.
Here's my biggest problem. There's two issues with the 3DS I have right now. One is I just feel like a lot of the stuff that's within it is not explained well. Like the first time you use Street Pass or Spot Pass or any of these awkwardly named things that don't necessarily like I don't know what those things mean by name alone, right? They're branded Nintendo things that don't have any sort of bearing in the real world. They're explained to me and I still don't understand them. Like I don't understand what the virtuous like benefit of collecting Street Passes are without asking people who are already doing it. That might be less of a user interface thing and more of a marketing thing.
So the things there's also they use some iconography that is bad. You know, obviously the friend code thing is pretty bad. The act of street passing is kind of cool that people will show up in your games. But, you know, overall, things run really super slow. It is a step in the right direction that you could bounce out of an app real quick. But to actually go fully into another app, you have to close it. But I mean,
and that was my other thing. Like, a lot of those things that they're calling apps or whatever the app layer is versus the OS layer. To me, like going into settings should not be an app.
So
I should be able to modify brightness and stuff like that without having to.
You can.
Maybe that's a bad
brightness.
Example,
brightness is a bad example. But the rest of the settings, yeah, are behind a wall.
Like Street Pass and this area you go to for Street Pass is separate from things that actually utilize Street Pass in a lot of cases. Or when I'm collecting Street Passes, like there's two games you can play within that interface.
Mm-hmm.
But then to get more Street Passes that you may have already gotten, like you have to desert the Street Passes you haven't used yet. So if I get 10 Street Passes and then I'm playing those games and I get 10 more Street Passes, I have to finish playing both of those games before I can go utilize the other Street Passes.
Or else you've lost those. Yeah, you've lost the opportunity to use those characters. No, I agree with you completely. Like, there's a lot of stuff that should be combined. Like the Mii Plaza, the Mii Maker, and the other one?
There's the Mii Maker, the Mii Plaza, the Street Pass, the Nintendo Zone.
That should be all folded into one. You know, why health and safety information is its own fucking entry is probably came down to some weird. I mean, you could see where a lot of stuff became designed by committee in here. And yeah. As somebody who often has his designs compromised by shitty account people, I can understand what happened here. But it is not slick. It's essentially a pre-iOS device. And you know, say what you want, whether you're an Apple fan or not. I mean, you have to admit that mobile centric design has been different since iOS was released. But so thanks for joining the UX Hour
here on Tech Talk Weekly.
Oh shit, remind me to put that in.
You are listening to Tech Talk Weekly on Fantastic Neighborhood. Touch the shark.
So anyway, Oscar time is upon us, Fred.
Oh boy, you know I usually wait very anxiously with bated breath for the Oscars, John.
So I have this thing that I've been doing for the last 5 years where I see every picture nominated for Best Picture. And it's always a race to the finish because since they
didn't they up it to like 10 movies or something like that?
It's up to 10 now. So it's 9 or 10 the last few years based on a minimum amount of votes. So I have 3 left. I still haven't seen Zero Dark Thirty, Lincoln, or Life of Pi. Just this weekend I saw Amour and Beasts of the Southern Wild. Beasts of the Southern Wild is incredible. Amour is also incredible, but it is fucking depressing, and it's in French. It's this race to the finish. It is a fucking travesty that Dread is not nominated in any of the technical categories.
Oh my God, tell me about it. What movies are nominated in those categories?
It doesn't matter. Not Dread. It's absolutely pathetic that it isn't nominated for cinematography or visual effects. I honestly think it could be one of those that gets a nod in like sound editing or sound design.
One of those awards before the actual award show.
I'm sure at the actual technical awards they might have given it, but you know, the sort of technical awards they give at the main show, I was just really disappointed. And I think the problem is that not enough people saw this film. So again, I want to go ahead and say Fantastic Neighborhoods film of 2012 Best Picture goes to Dread 3D. So
absolutely.
So a round of applause, everybody.
Bravo. Bravo, Dread. Bravo.
Pour the champagne, Dread 3D.
He is the law.
He is the law. So anyway, Fred, what did we do this weekend?
John, so surprisingly enough, we went to Indiecade East for a day.
Yeah, that was neat. We met up with guest of the show, CJ Kirshner. We sat in some panels. We played some fucking classic games. We did some neat stuff.
Yeah, so maybe we should start off by saying, what exactly is Indiecade?
So you go, Fred.
No, John, you're better at this. You know the scene. I'm just going to recite what I read on Wikipedia.
Indiecade is the country's premier festival for independent video games. It's normally in California. It's basically what Sundance used to be for film back before it's what it is now. It's an independent games festival. Creators showing off their works, keynotes from big people in the industry, and you know that sort of thing. And it was at the Museum of the Moving Picture in Queens. So there's also, I mean, there's actual older games to play. And the theme of the whole show was Space War, which is, you know, the first. I mean, commonly recognized as one of the first video games. So that being said, we went to the Sunday of it, and we, you know, we went and saw a few panels, some good, some bad, some fucking amazing. We played some old school arcade games. All the games were space centric, and we, you know, perused some of the indie offerings, some of the stuff out now, some of it that we saw at PAX. We said hello to Brendan Chung, who is the creator of 30 Flights of Loving, which we played on the show.
And Brendan, if you're listening to this because we gave you information about the show, I am really sorry for the awkwardness of my hello.
Yeah, Fred, you're weird. We sat down and played Guacamelee for 5 minutes, which I played at PAX previously. Man, that game is fun.
Yeah, it reminded me a little bit of, I don't want to say Mark and the Ninja, but Shank, or, you know, any heavily animated 2D platformer.
It's
this one was pretty frantic, though.
It also is kind of Trine-ish, but without the separate characters. Anyway, I mean, overall, I got to say that this is really cool. It seemed like turnout was not big. Like, there was a big line to get in earlier in, but, like, it never seemed like the whole thing was packed. You know, we did go on the Sunday, but at the end of the day, like, you know, we found out that and I'm a person who is, like, reading video game blogs so much that I'm hitting refresh.
You've got your ear to the wall of the video game industry.
And I only heard about it last week. Like, it's really kind of weird. I feel like they really dropped the ball as far as marketing this, especially given how prolific they like to say that the indie scene is in New York. But yeah, they need to. I mean, it's a little bit of the pot calling the kettle black, because we don't really get the word out about our show as great as we would like to. But, you know, it could have been better, certainly.
Yeah, and, you know, I don't know if asking for more people to be there is necessarily the best thing, or if it wouldn't be detrimental to the thing. But it just, like, the fact that the people who wanted to know about this, like, and I'm going to use us as an example, the fact that we didn't know until, like, we had already made plans and then could only go for one day, and we found out about it sort of in a roundabout way, is a little disconcerting. Like, we know about PAX, and we know about PAX for the rest of our lives.
The other thing is, we're on mailing lists. You know, I'm on the Kill Screen mailing list. I'm on the NYU Game Center mailing list. Like, I mean, aren't you partnered with any of these guys? I know they're partnered with ICP. And the
Kill Screen was there. They were a partner.
I feel like, you know, and maybe they sent an email and I browsed over it. But, you know, anyway, that's not too important. Do you want to talk about some of the games that we saw, or some of the games that were heavily talked about?
Yeah, so and bear in mind, we only went on Sunday, but the three that came up all the time and the three that we actually saw at the event during some of the panels were Dysphoria, which is a game, I guess, about someone becoming transgendered.
I don't know if people become transgendered.
It's a very metaphor driven game.
I've heard about this before. It's Anna Anthropy. It's something that's been on my radar, and I've been planning to play for a while.
Sure.
There was also Cart Life, which is the retail simulation for depressive art school types.
Yeah, it seemed hyper depressing, to the point where, like, I thought it was very interesting with what they were doing with that game, and then I almost don't want to play it because I feel like I'm just going to get so depressed.
I really actually want to play it a lot because I'm I mean, I'm a person who likes to feel more than I don't necessarily think the only thing games has to be is fun, as long as you don't actively hate the controls, the active interfacing with the thing, but fun isn't necessarily the number one requirement. It doesn't have to have a special place in my heart. It doesn't have to have a 4.5 in the fun factor from GamePro magazine.
Fun wasn't necessary. I feel like the story might hit a little bit too close to home in some points, but I'm assuming
that would be great in that case. Give me a story that hits close to home.
So the third game that we saw a panel about was Unmanned, which is sort of like a day in the life of a unarmed drone army pilot guy.
Unmanned drone.
Yes. And it's sort of like it's a left brain, right brain exercise of a game. It seemed actually very interesting.
Yeah, no, I agree. I actually plan on playing all three of these. And who knows, maybe one of these will be Game Club. Although I don't know if, at least for the latter two, I think I might know too much to Game Club these.
I think so. I think basically we attended Game Clubs for these at this point.
And they did a much better job than we do. I'm sorry, the guy who from the Johann Sebastian Joust guy who talked about Cart Life, you know, I didn't agree with everything he said, but the way he, you know, it's really, God, I don't, I'm going
to
get
well,
on this.
You don't have to agree with everything someone says, John. That's the point of a discussion.
That's actually what a lot of people and a lot of us gamer types don't get. Seeing people talk about games in this capacity is fucking incredible to me. It feels great, it feels like I'm not wasting my fucking time with this pastime.
We're getting there,
yeah,
as it were, as a industry, as a culture, as a whatever you want to call it. Like, discussion is happening that's more than, you know, the superficialities of the surface level of these things.
Yeah, agree 100%. And you know, there was one thing, you know, there's an interesting question he asked, and it's, you know, so many of these games, and you know, it's a point that Bissell raised in Extra Lives, but so many of these games, you're saving the world and yet leave you feeling so unaffected after doing so. And so he asked a question of the audience of, you know, who has had, you know, what of these games that create this, you know, what of these games where you're saving the world actually create some sort of emotional experience? And the fucking...
Let me stop you there, John. One of the thing that he was really getting at, because what he talked about before that was actually movies as well, is that in any game or movie or whatever have you, where the overarching narrative is the hero has to save the world, in which of those movies are you actually, or which of those games is the story really about actually saving the world?
Yeah, you know, and absolutely, like, fucking dude, even Armageddon is about interpersonal relationships. Like, it's dumb of fucking marquee you know, Michael Bay fucking movie as it is, it's about that relationship between Affleck, Bruce Willis, and Steven Tyler's daughter. And it's about that other guy who was a deadbeat dad, but now he's going to save the world and shit like that. The actual thing that causes an emotional reaction is not the act of saving the world. It's the fucking interactions between characters, right?
The saving the world in all of these games and movies is typically the catalyst for the actual storyline of whatever that character's experience is, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. But the fucking thing that really got me was, like, you know, the guy this fucking kid raised his hand. He's like, well, in Mother 3, there's the part where, and, you know, I don't fucking know any of the characters in Earthbound, but yo, you're missing the fucking point, sport. You're missing the fucking point, especially that you suggested fucking Earthbound.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing we kept mentioning, is that the guy who raised his hand there, and we couldn't actually tell who it was, but he was at other panels after the fact raising his hand and asking similarly narrow, like, short-sighted questions. Like, whether the top fell or not at the end of Inception is not the fucking point.
You know, when Meredith died in Final Fantasy VII, I cried. And I cried so much. But then that gets down to fucking, you know, how come you couldn't just use a fucking Phoenix Down? It doesn't make any fucking sense. Like, you've created this world where you can revive people, yet... Anyway,
missing the point is not a hallmark of the gaming community, but it is an ever-present thing. Believe me, there are people who miss the mark in every genre of entertainment.
Yeah. That show was pretty interesting. There was a less than awesome panel about the New York indie scene as a whole, which was really disappointing. And then
it lacked a real focus, and it was very self-serving.
Yeah, which is kind of like encompasses the New York anything scene, I think.
Yeah, it's very, very insular. It's like, hey, we have this thing and you're not allowed to be part of it.
I don't know. It's creative types in New York. But there was one good thing that came out of that, and that was the guy who mentioned that, you know, NYU students who like to put Ludo in front of everything.
Yeah.
but you know, I asked a fucking question that
no one answered.
Yeah, like I'm like, hey, you know, I know you're making these games and stuff, but what is your responsibility to appeal to a wider audience? And the guy well, our game is for blah 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 blah, but how are you fucking making it appeal to them? I understand it's for them. I understand who you made it for, but how are you getting them to download it on their feature phones? That being said,
You kind of had to be there.
So there was a John Sharp gave the keynote about so your sort of DIY ethics, punk rock, and sort of like the future of these like marketplaces. He said, and also the, you know, the early history of gaming. Really interesting stuff. He said, some of it is a little naive, some of it's a little hypocritical, because you can expose the fucking DIY ethics all you want and how fucking awesome Fugazi is, but if you teach at a school where tuition is $50,000 a year, then you're as big a sellout as the Go-Go's, aren't you? A little bit.
I think, yeah. I mean, and you know what was funny? The Q&A that came after the keynote, like, there were several questions or comments made, and they all sort of amounted... Yeah, they all basically amounted to, like... So, like, what you're saying is that I should be DIY and not go to college and just make the things that I want to make, but then you teach at a college that costs $1 billion a year in tuition.
Well, you know, and that was interesting because... you know who weighed in was the and you know, shit, his name escapes me, but he was in Indie Game the Movie. He runs the NYU Game Center. We've seen him talk numerous times, but he was like, "Yeah, you don't have to go to school." I'm like,
well, at least he was honest.
That's fucking great, man. But yeah, anyway.
So yeah, overall, it was a fun time. It did have that feeling of the same. It had the same feeling to me as PAX East the first year had, in that they were still just sort of getting their shit together.
But yeah, and I liked
it's a
PAX
much
East
smaller event.
Year.
Also,
yeah, I liked PAX the first year.
Yeah, I loved PAX the first year.
Felt
but
fucking
yeah,
legit.
It's never going to be a huge event. I mean, even if they have it at the museum again next year, it's not a huge location. All in all, we had a fun time, and I think we're better off for it. So, looking forward to it next year.
Yeah, agreed. So, with that, Fred, we'll be right back with, well, the next segment. Now, if you feel that you can't go on, because all of your hope is gone, and your life is filled with much confusion, until happiness is just an illusion, and your world around is crumbling down, darling, reach out. Come on, girl, reach out for me, reach out for me.
And we're back with Game Club. John, we played Aliens Infestation on our fantastic but poorly thought over Nintendo 3DSs.
Yeah, so...
What is Game Club, John? Let's tell the people who are just tuning in.
So Game Club is where we play the same thing, and then we talk about it, much like one would do in a book club. When it's a story-heavy game, we blow the spoilers wide open. But, you know, it's mostly about taking a deeper dive into a game. Yeah, so this week it was Aliens Infestation, which is a... DS game released, I think last year, maybe the year before. I think it was last year. It's done by WayForward, who is better known for the Wii A Boy and His Blob.
Yes,
you know, and a few other games.
It was published by Sega, developed by WayForward, and somehow Gearbox is involved in this.
Well, because I think Gearbox hired. WayForward to do the work.
Yeah, Gearbox has the license for Aliens, so I think they must have outsourced it to WayForward.
Yeah. So it is it's a side-scrolling Metroidvania style shooting action type shooting game. I think it's an homage to the early to mid 90s and is better than most of those games from that era.
Sure. But the thing we both walked away with on this one is that it feels like a Game Boy Advance game being put out on the DSi, being played on a 3DS.
What is a DSi? What is a DSi, Fred? That's a DS with a camera, right?
Yes.
I don't know.
Okay, so just the DS. It doesn't matter.
Okay, right. I'm being a semantical dickhead.
Yes, you are. Anyway, but yeah, it feels like an older game, and it doesn't feel like it's pushing the technology even remotely close to what your normal games would push on it.
I think that's intentional, man. I really feel it is. I mean, if you look at the animation, it's smooth. You got to keep
the animation's actually great, and it's very well thought out.
You got to also keep in mind that we're playing this at a blown up resolution, because we're playing it on our 3DSs. So it's doubling, you know, it's a little blockier than it would be if you played it on an actual DS. But it's, you know, I really feel like it's an homage to those style games and not really trying to be anything else.
You know, and you're probably right. I guess it takes me for surprise a little bit because I didn't come in thinking that. Because, like, when you told me we were playing an Aliens game from, like, a year or two ago, in my head I'm going, oh, this has got to be, like, a first-person shooter or something like that. And then you're like, no, it's a platformer. I'm like, it's a platformer. And I kept thinking back to, do you remember the old Aliens arcade game, which was sort of like a Golden Axe style?
The Capcom one. That's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Do you mean the Aliens one from the late 80s or the Aliens versus Predator one from the 90s?
So the AVP one, because the Aliens one was just was like a straightforward like platformer 2D, pure 2D side scroller. This one is the one I'm thinking of was the Aliens Predator one, where you get they just like made up their own mythos for it. Like they're like, here's
can we
a
say
marine.
Can we just settle on mythos?
Okay, mythos.
Okay.
But, you know, they had a Marine, and he also has a tech arm, and he's also, like, doing wrestling moves. And here's the different kind of Predators. That was an awesome game, by the way. I don't take me wrong. I actually loved that game. It was entirely an arcade quarter muncher.
Yeah.
What I kept thinking this was, but this is not. This is strictly a Metroidvania platformer.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's got that other... it's got this permadeath sort of element to it, where you've got, I want to say like the original Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles on NES.
I was about to say the same thing. Yeah, you get four characters, and then one of them dies, they're dead.
Yeah, the cool thing about it is since it's a somewhat modern game, you can recruit fill-ins for that, and the dialogue and stuff changes based on who you're actually playing as. So they don't totally, I mean, you could still beat the game, because you are going to lose a character when you fucking play the bosses, because they are hard. They are hard, and they are hard.
Effectively, what it is that the different characters represent your extra lives, and you can get one-ups, but they didn't want to make it as simple as, oh, you have a one-up now?
Yeah, there's an explanation in the game story, which is great. And I mean, you know, this is the kind of thing I expect from WayForward. This is kind of what I was expecting going into that Spider-Man game that I played, because sure. This is how previous ones have been. This is so much better than that Spider-Man game. The dialogue changes. Like, I recruited this, like, goth chick Marine who is just, like, whatever to everything. And she's awesome. I kind of dig it. The writing is not great, though.
No, and the writing is really just, like, to push dialogue point, go here, do that. That's really all the dialogue boils down to for the most part, but they had to make it a little bit more than, hey, Marine, go here, do this, because it would get repetitive. But some of the dialogue is, like, just – it's over-characterized. Like, just like you said, the goth chick is always like, yeah, whatever, I guess I'll go there. And then, like, the super Marines are always like, hoorah, or whatever.
Yeah.
It gets a little cornball after a while.
You know, and it really kind of breaks my heart to an extent that, like – you know, it feels like there wasn't necessarily a writer on this, like a writing-ass writer whose main job is writing. You know, it was probably – the dialogue stuff was probably put in as an afterthought. And I think that really could have put this game over the top, as if they would have focused on that a little bit. That being said, there are some clever things in it. I don't want to say funny or necessarily good, because it comes back down to that thing, like – you know, when you're at a PAX panel and people cheer just if you mention something they know?
Or like at an IndieCade East panel?
Yeah, until I fucking directly made fun of the kid sitting in front of me. you know, it's kind of that sort of thing. Like, there's a couple of mentions of pop culture things. But, I mean, a lot of times people think funny writing is fucking pop culture references. I mean, Family Guy has made a mint off of this, and sometimes
it basically made an industry off of it, right? Yeah. Like, it's just referential humor, right? It's, hey, here's a thing you know, so we're going to talk about it, and that's going to make you happy.
Yeah, and I'm probably like rambling a little bit too much for how much it actually happens in the game, but there is this REM joke where fucking, I don't know, I'm playing as this one Marine, and the fucking command guy is like, you know, you need to go and you know, hack into this frequency. And he says, what's the frequency, Kenneth? And I'm like, okay, I didn't see that coming. That's a title of an REM song. There's probably 5% of the people fucking, playing this game get that. But thank you. Thank you.
I mean, it's not really all that heady a question, right? Or it's a song. Hey, let's use the song title as a double entendre. That's all it really is. And there's a lot of references in there like that. And yeah. I think it's just to give it something, but it could have been something so much more.
Yeah. I don't know. Is there anything really else? I mean, I haven't beat it. I'm a 65% of the way through at this point. I'm going to beat it.
Well, I have some questions, which I'm going to have to find out as I play it. Not with the story, but just how they executed it. It's not a great game. I'm going to be honest with you, John. It's fun and it's good in small doses, but I find that, like, the combat was really, in my opinion, lacking. Like, you know, there's a jump function in this game, which already is like, all right, there's a jump function because it's a platformer, but you can't, like, jump and shoot at the same time.
It's not a platformer.
No, but you know what I mean. Like, there's some, like, clunkiness to the controller.
The jump – I figured out the jump button is there. Sometimes you need to get into vents that you need to jump to.
Right. But other than that, like, even with the boss battles, like, I didn't feel like there was a strategy to them. And it might just be by virtue of how hard they were, but most of the boss battles were shoot and run the fuck away. Shoot the run the fuck away. Shoot, run, fuck away,
yeah,
and then roll through.
They're really – yeah, there isn't Yeah, no, I'd agree that the combat design is not that great. The overall shell, though, of exploring, going from place to place, getting this ability to gain access to a new spot, I just got to a part where you walk by a power loader and it's very clear that at some point you will be using that power loader.
Oh, of course. I mean, it wouldn't be an Aliens game if not, right?
Yo, real talk, come on. Like, that's enough to keep me going. Like, they successfully dangled a carrot in front of my fucking face.
Sure. And, you know, it's not the worst title. I mean, plus, you spent, what, $10 on this?
Yeah, we spent $10 a copy. I gotta say, saying it's not the worst is actually, I think, a little bit more negative than me. If I was gonna give this like a star rating out of 5, I'd probably give it like something like a 3.5 or something.
Sure.
Oh, this game is a travesty. Give it a 70.
well, as you said, John, this is 1995's action game of the year.
Yeah, I really think if you're into this, if you know, it's not Symphony of the Night, this is sort of difficult. It's not Metroid 2 kind of difficult, but if you're looking for like a fun little distraction to play on your DS or DSi or 3DS or 3DS XL or DSi XL or DS Lite, then I really recommend this. It's fun. I think it's a really fun game, and if that's the big qualifier for what makes it, you know, what's worth playing, then I think this is fun.
Yeah, I would definitely say it's fun, and you know, it's blessedly enough that it respects your time as a gamer, I would say, because
yeah.
It's not terribly long. You can
no.
do multiple playthroughs if you want, and I have a feeling that based on what characters you end with, you might get slightly different endings or end dialogue.
Yeah, I also just unlocked the knife game from Aliens.
I did as well. I just got that before the show, actually.
Yeah, so that being said, you know, I gotta say, if you're looking for something to play on your DS, and you know, we're very value conscious gamers. For $10,
yeah, you could do much worse than this game.
Yeah, I really think this is a worthwhile pickup. So
John, it was a fun game club.
Yeah. All right, so we're just gonna be right back with the saying goodbye part. Screecher breaks and black light blinking. That's entertainment. That's entertainment. A smash of glass and the rumble of boots. An electric train and a ripped up phone booth. Paste back to wars and the cry of the tomcat. Lights going out and I'm kicking the balls. I say that's entertainment. All right, buddy, you want to do the outro?
Yeah.
Can you borrow
pick Game Club?
Yeah. Can you borrow D's iPad for 2 hours?
Oh yeah.
To play a game?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, Game Club is the room.
The room.
It's a puzzle game. I think it's maybe a dollar or two.
Cost is not an object, my friend.
Yeah, I think it should probably take you, I don't know, 2-3 hours or something.
It's iOS only?
To my knowledge, yes. Actually, it's coming to Vita.
It's coming to the Amiga. Oh,
it's coming to the ZX Spectrum.
Where's my N-Gage? All right, enough archaic games.
Enough gay banter.
John... It's always tough to end the show because we never plan this and we really don't have a good way to outro it.
Yeah, dude. Also particularly weird this because we're doing another one of these time travel episodes where we didn't reduce it or we didn't produce it all at the same time so we could be timely with this PlayStation announcement.
Yeah, no, we had like 3 separate recording sessions this week. It's rough to talk to you that much that often.
Yeah. I like you more now that we don't work together.
Yeah, that's good too.
So... Game Club next week. It's the room.
It's The Room, and it's not The Room, the movie.
It's not the Tommy Wiseau movie.
Yes. It's The Room, the iOS game coming soon to Vita.
Yeah, it's available on iPad and iPhone. Have you played about an hour of it already? I would say probably just do it on an iPad. It needs a bigger surface. So it's a puzzle game working in real space, gesture-based stuff. It's interesting. It's got some... I play it with headphones on.
Sounds game clubby to me.
Yeah.
So, we don't have a community segment this week because we, quite frankly, were too busy to ask questions and to get this all edited up together. So, sorry, community, but if you would like to...
Yeah, we time-traveled.
If you would like to talk to me and John, if you'd like to be part of the show, if you'd like to participate, you can reach us at any number of places. You can email us at letters@fantasticneighborhood.com.
You can also
call us.
Or you, fuck you, Fred. Let me talk.
All right, John, go right ahead.
Sorry. Or you could call us at 720-HOODIE-6. That's 720-HOODIE-6.
Oh, man, it's late.
Oh, man, quick admin note. Every single prize has been mailed out for the Able Gamers thing finally. So, Harold, you can stop texting me all the time. You should have your shit by the end of the week.
Just start texting you about other things now.
That's cool.
What are you wearing?
We're friends, man. We're friends.
I know. Harold's good people. We'd also, you know, like you guys to follow us on Twitter, of which I've actually been using for once.
Dude, I made a resolution where I have to tweet three things I find interesting a day that are like almost related to my job, like tech or design or something. So that's one of the things.
I tweeted today more than I've tweeted. I think I doubled the amount of tweets that I actually had on my Twitter account because of this event. And you know, my Twitter account, for all of you who'd like to follow me, is @ProtoAddict.
And I'm
John. You have a Twitter account.
Oh my god, we're just gonna talk over each over. Yeah, blah
yes,
blah
we
blah.
Are.
Bah, best
spit it out.
Nobody gets this far in the episode. Anyway, I have a friend at work who told me, he's like, "Hey, I almost got through a whole episode, dude."
That makes me super happy.
But you can follow me at Twitter at Hey John Anderson. That's J-O-N.
Anderson. No H.
Yeah.
You can also follow the show at Fantastic Hood.
And facebook.com/Fantastic Neighborhood. Please subscribe in iTunes and rate us in iTunes. We'd really appreciate it.
So, John, with all that being said, you know, I have to say, I think that PlayStation 4
Orbis
announcement.
It's Orbis.
The PlayStation Orbis announcement was the best announcement ever. And scene.
You know, I'm keeping it in until you say end scene.
We'll be right back.
Yeah, no, Killzone, you could... well, I hope it was a live demo. You could see
Fred,
that
did
there
I,
was...
I think I lost... I think I lost you for a second, dude.
You got me now?
Yeah, talk to me.
Check 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah, you're coming in muffled, but I can hear you.
Yeah, you too. I don't have anything else running, though, so...
Yeah, just let's just go.
What were we just talking about?
Target video.
Target video.
Dun, 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 dun. Breaking news, Fred. Absolutely. Why are
I'm
we...
I'm going to hit record.
Fuck you. Okay, I'm just going to... Damn it. God damn it. That was good.
Go ahead. Just do it again. We'll pretend like it didn't happen.
Anyway, you're going to be able to export your MP3s real quick so I can get this edited tonight, right? Okay,